This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another Total Saints podcast. This is our weekly get-together where we discuss the last 7 days supporting Southampton Football Club, a friendly support group, if you will. We're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel to be the first to see our latest videos. As always, a massive thank you to our TSP patrons who make all of this possible. You can visit patreon.com/Total Saints podcast to find out more about getting involved. Coming up this week on the pod, it was a must-win game to keep survival hopes alive. Palace at home, and of course, Saints blew it. But is that game over? We've got plenty to discuss. And this week, it's Friday Night Football, Arsenal away. I'm sure we're all really looking forward to that. I'm Martin Stark, and I'm joined this week by Steve Grant, who's the owner of Saints Web. Glenda LeCour is the writer of the blog League 1-10, and Alfie House is the Southampton reporter for the Southern Daily Echo. All underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 229 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC. From dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints Podcast.
Now, it seemed simple, didn't it? Beat Crystal Palace at home. Keep your hopes of staying in the league alive. And in a display that really summed up the season, Saints offered nothing in a 2-0 defeat. Glenn, that was entirely predictable, really. No fight, no desire, and I've got to be honest, no surprise.
No, not at all. I think you summed it up pretty well there. It's interesting. When I was younger, I used to get angry at football, you know, properly sort of stereotypical, it ruined the whole weekend if we got beat. And I kind of grew out of that. I could feel myself doing it again yesterday, and then you just decide to laugh at it. It was so bad again. Started from the moment the team news dropped. I assume we're going to get onto that, separate entity. But the team news dropped, and you don't want to be too negative about it. You think, okay, you know, let's go, let's do it, let's see if something different happens. But nothing did. I mean, we played all right for the first, I'd say, 15 minutes, where we looked okay. We looked like we had some idea. We restricted Palace. They didn't do anything in the first half at all. So that part of it worked okay. But, you know, we created a couple of chances. The one that Walcott blazed over and the corner routine that Aribo blazed over. Noticed I've said blazed over twice. We didn't work the goalkeeper. And both of those should have been, you know, giving Johnston some work to do, but didn't happen. Second half, another 10 minutes of boredom. And then Eze scores the first goal. It's pathetic. As usual, the goal we concede, Maitland-Niles gets beaten far too easily. Bazunu does the worst thing he could possibly do with the cross and just flaps it into the middle. And Eze, who started the move, has jogged into the penalty area, and, you know, Lavia and Ward-Prowse have just left him, basically, and he's arrived on his own and scored. You know that you're not going to get the reaction that you need at 1-0, and you know, nothing much happened. I think
despite the little huddle that they have now,
yeah, well, the non-contact huddle on this occasion, wasn't it? Yeah. It was very much very half-hearted, kind of in keeping with that second half performance, really.
Yeah. So we chucked on a couple of subs. It was Tolpaw and Gineppo for Aribo and Walcott, who were both pathetic and wouldn't be missed at all. But we didn't play to Paul's strengths at all. And before we sort of like adapted at all, we Eze gets free and scores again. Midfield just lost him, and he picked up the ball and just drilled it in. So 2-0, and at that point we decided to have a little bit of a flurry, which was led by Charlie Alcaraz, who hit the post and then put another one just over. So having kind of built up a head of steam for the first time in the game that we should have been doing since the start, all inspired by one bloke, Sellers of course takes him off. Which is just, it's just mental, you know.
He wasn't tracking back. That's...
Oh, for God's sake. It's just ridiculous. So he proved he can't pick a team from the start, and he can't change the game and read it either. So taking Alcaraz off, I just felt like walking out at that stage. Because he brought on Edozie, who he obviously doesn't trust. He's never played him at all. And Stuart Armstrong, who's been rubbish the last few weeks. But what are they going to do in 10 minutes? So it's an absolute crazy substitution, just of a guy who didn't seem to know what he was doing at that point. And it was just general garbage. I mean, we played with two false nines this week. And, you know, I asked Jacob last week whether we were still using the playbook, you know, and the red zone at the edge, you know, the edge of the penalty area and all that stuff. I was watching in the first half. There was no one in that red zone. There was just no one there. You had Sulemana out wide, you had Walcott out wide, you had Aribo kind of jogging in from midfield, and Alcaraz trying to get in there, but there was no one there. And the midfield picked up the ball, and quite often that was Aribo back in midfield. And he looked up, and there's no one there, just two central defenders. So I don't know, I'd love Ruben Sellers to explain. Well, no, I wouldn't, because I couldn't be bothered to listen, but I'd love him to explain how he thought we were going to score a goal. In that game, teams know now, don't give free kicks away around the edge of the box, and that's Southampton done. But having said that, we did create a couple of chances in the first half, but we missed them, and it's the usual, give away a soft goal and absolutely no way back into the game. So it was pathetic, and it's another nail in the coffin. But once again, you look at the league table and we're like the monster that won't die in your nightmare.
Nails for that coffin, aren't we?
Yeah, or the turd that won't flush. that's us at the moment. We're still 4 points behind, and it's ridiculous. And the other rubbish teams keep losing, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. If we're 4 points behind, looking at us at the moment, we're struggling to get 4 points between now and the end of the season. Struggling to get 4 goals between now and the end of the season. It's just pathetic again. And I wouldn't blame anybody if they just can't be bothered with it for the rest of the season from a supporter's point of view.
Steve, what was your take on yesterday? I mean, play well for 45 minutes and patches, create some chances, don't take them, lose. It seems like it's just the same every week now for us. We're talking about the same problems, aren't we?
I think we were okay in patches in the first half. As Glenn said, created two or three half-decent openings. Palace did nothing. We kept them at arm's length. And we kind of looked like in the thing that we sort of said last week in previewing this game was that Palace were kind of the worst possible opponent for us, because they sit in deep and try and hit us on the counter attack and basically just pick us off. And actually, we seem to be quite well covered and well practiced on how to kind of recover from those sort of situations. And first half defensively, I thought, we're pretty sound here. Going forward, it was a little bit sluggish, but I think we're in this sort of middle sort of ether period where we're not sure whether we sort of how much we want to commit going forward, because we don't quite trust ourselves at the back. So as a result, we don't go full throttle for the whole time. We kind of pick and choose our moments, which against the better teams, I think is absolutely fine. Against the weaker sides, and I mean, for all that Palace have obviously picked up under Hodgson since their fixture list has got significantly easier, they didn't offer anything really. And it was frustrating that a defence that's very clearly sort of there to be got at, as demonstrated by the fact that we did carve them open three or four times, we didn't really didn't really commit full pace to it all, really. I mean, as Glenn said, playing with two false nines. I mean, the Rebo was decent for the first 20 minutes or so, basically because I don't think Palace quite expected that to be the way we were gonna set up, and it just surprised them. So he found some good pockets of space. But once they worked it out and adjusted accordingly, he was kind of anonymous, really. Didn't do anything. Walcott was okay in the channels in the first half, but as ever with him, he makes brilliant runs on a very regular basis, and yet every single person who's trying to play a pass to him always delays the pass by a fraction of a second. The difference between players at the top is that they've always got the confidence that someone's making the run, and they just play the pass. There's no sort of thought process about it. You just do it. It's instinct. And I think Walcott wouldn't get into a better team these days, but if he was playing in a better team, he'd have had so many through balls in the last 4 or 5 weeks. He'd have absolutely thrived on it. But we've played one good pass through to him yesterday, which was the shot that he put just over. And other than that, we delayed it too much, and he'd then get flagged offside. So that was frustrating. Second half, as we've seen so often this season, we literally just didn't turn up. I mean, Palace put a little bit more sort of attacking effort into it, obviously seeing that we were there for the taking, although quite how they didn't work that out from before kickoff, I don't quite understand. I mean, have you not seen any games this season? Maybe Roy Hodgson was off rather than when he decided not to scout Iceland and went for went to Paris on a bit of a tourism trek with Ray Lewington. Maybe he went and did the Sea City Museum instead of watching Saints.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Steve, because he actually said in his post-match press conference that he hadn't watched barely any Crystal Palace this season. He didn't take any interest in them, really. So he's just come in and turned them over somehow. So,
God.
makes it worse, doesn't it? Yeah. It makes it worse.
I mean, clearly there's a thing there where he does seem to get the best out of Eze, who I thought was excellent second half. And he's the sort of player that we want someone like Adozie to be. That sort of guy who can just turn it on at a moment's notice. And he just glides past people. If he wasn't doing it against us, it would have been quite good to watch. But yeah, it was just limp that second half. I'm not sure anyone really comes out with any credit. Alcaraz, as you say, was decent in that 20-minute spell where we suddenly decided after going 2-0 down, well, we might as well have a go now, mightn't we? But other than that, I mean, even the guys that you would largely hang your hat on didn't really show up second half. Lavia wore Prowse far too easily, bullied off the ball. Yeah. Prowse went missing, really. Nothing from the wide players, nothing... obviously nothing up front because we didn't have anyone there. and then you're back to the mess at the back where, Bednarek weirdly makes the correct decision to try and to shepherd the ball out of play and then does nothing to shepherd the ball out of play. He basically just stands there and lets the guy come around the back of him. Yeah. And he got away with it. But that was the point at which everyone turned on him again. And I mean, it's just pathetic. It's just, again, square pegs in round holes again at fullback.
Yeah.
Maitland-Niles was all right in patches in the first half. Dreadful in the second, far too easily beaten on the left for the first goal for the cross. I mean, the ball shouldn't be at the guy's feet in the penalty area at that point. He should have been engaged probably 5-10 yards away from the touchline. And Walker-Peters ineffective on the left because he's not left-footed, so there's no natural balance there. I mean, Pero, I appreciate that his sort of defensive awareness can slip at times, and I know I'm pretty sure that's why he's not in the team on a regular basis, and why we keep going with this sort of nonsense of playing everybody out of position to accommodate, but it just provides some natural balance. And
scored a couple of goals as well.
Well, and a bit of attacking output. I mean, we've got 24 league goals all season. He's got 1/12 of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I tell you what, a positive that came out of yesterday is that Maitland-Niles can't play next week.
Of course, because of the loan, yeah.
Yeah.
Alfie, there seemed to be an air of acceptance from the players and the crowd at that final whistle. I think is it a case of deep down we all knew that this was how it was going to play out, and it just went to the script? That's what we thought was going to happen yesterday.
Well, I think certainly the supporters knew what was going to happen, and especially when it went to 1-0. We've seen it how many times in must-win games this season where the first goal goes in and then all of a sudden they absolutely fall apart. So I don't think anybody was surprised by that. But if the players have accepted that they're losing and they're going down, then I'd be very disappointed by that, because they've not given any inclination to us in the press, and that includes Ruben Sellers, that is the case. They seem to pretend week in, week out that things are building and they're going to be okay. I mean, I didn't speak to Theo Walcott yesterday. Benji did. I'm not just digging out Theo for no reason, but you know, he came in and said like he seemed pretty chipper, considering they're all you know on the block and they're going down potentially. And Ruben Sellers, you know. It actually took a lot longer for supporters to really get sick and tired of Ruben Sellers' comments than I thought it would to most of you, because for weeks he's been saying that it's been...
Yeah,
you know,
one of you two said very early on that you're going to get sick and tired of his comments. Was it you or was it Jacob? One of you,
I may have said that,
said
yeah. Yeah, he's very polite, he's very considerate, but ultimately he's
put up with it if the results were okay.
Exactly, yeah, he's not hugely interested in that. I don't, to be honest with you, believe a word that he says. I don't think he believes it either. I think he's just trying to protect the players. I think he's worked out that this is a mentally deficient group, and I don't mean like they're not clever. I mean they're scared, they're not brave. And he's realised that he said to us that he has to put a safety net around these players. I need to put a safety net around these players to help them perform. And I think that has led to him just completely denying the situation they've been in the press conferences. And, you know, even yesterday, I asked him about Joe Rebo, and he was delighted with Joe Rebo. He felt that he was in the red zone, he was doing all the right things. And
Jesus.
I said, you know, he hasn't played a game for you. What's changed? How can he come in? You know, and I think I'm sick of it. To be honest with you, I'm sick of it.
Well, we've got a few more weeks of it to go, unfortunately, as well. That's the thing. I just wish we didn't have to hear from them for the remainder of the season. But, I mean, Glenn, that was one of the first messages we were sending each other at 2 o'clock yesterday when the team news was announced, wasn't it? You know, we were calling for some changes. We didn't want to see Elie Nussey start, but I don't think any of us would have put our money on Joe Aribo coming in for his first start since New Year's Eve, wasn't it?
Can you imagine the reaction if Elie Nussey had come off the bench?
Yeah.
Well,
it just doesn't make sense, does it? Although, credit where credit's due, you know, that flexible front four, as Steve said earlier on, it did confuse Palace, and the shape confused them. But
no.
Once they figured it out, we just had nothing nothing to offer.
Well, one of the things...
This could have been 2-0 up, couldn't they, ultimately? If they could take a chance, they could have been 2-0 up, and it's a totally different picture. So, but how many times are we going to say that before we move on, you know?
But you go back to 2 o'clock, and, you know, one of the things we've been moaning about... it seems like all season is the lack of urgency in the team. So the one player that you bring in is the most laid back, casual, sitting on a deck chair mentality type of player. I mean, it's the last person you'd bring in would be
guy who was literally quoted a few weeks ago saying he's not bothered if he's not playing.
Yeah. And it's just like mental. And has he been scoring loads of goals for the B team? No. Has he been tearing it up when he's come on as a sub for 5 minutes? No. Did he do anything when he played the last time he played, which I believe was against Grimsby? No, he was rubbish and he got substituted. So why on earth is he chosen? Again, I'll come back to something I said last week. Tall Paul's not everyone's idea of a player. And, you know, he doesn't look remotely like he's good enough to score goals in the Premier League. But we paid 18 million quid for him and Rasmus Ankersen recruited him. But he doesn't want to play him. If Che Adams is not fit, it seems like we're now going to play without a striker. I mean, I don't think Sekou Mara is a decent player to start a game. I think he's all right as an impact sub, but he scored last week and he still doesn't get picked. And it's just madness. So I couldn't believe it. Steve's already highlighted another massive problem. You're at home in a game that you have to win against an average team, and our best fullback. You know, all the attacking, a lot of attacking output comes from the fullbacks in the modern game, as we all know. Our best fullback is playing on the wrong side to accommodate a lone player who, again, is incredibly casual. I mean, Maitland-Niles, the tone for his game was set in the first minute with that ball that ended up at right back. And he thought, oh, that's running out. I won't bother to chase that. And Jordan Ayew kept it in. I mean, you know, So the fullback decision, nonsensical. Joe Aribo decision, nonsensical. I couldn't believe we managed to leave Elie Nussey out and made the team worse. That's an achievement. So, yeah, so at 2 o'clock, you see the team and you're right, I'm not going to put anything on Twitter. I'm just gonna go to the ground and watch the game and see how it goes. But you know, I knew it was going to be pathetic, and it turned out to be just that.
He's had his chance, hasn't he, Steve? You know, we all wanted Sellers to succeed, but when you see team sheets like that, it's kind of clear to me that he's out of his depth, and it's a shame because we really wanted it to work out because everyone says the players love him and he's a nice guy, but it's not working.
But that's the problem.
Yeah, agreed.
If the players like him, then okay, why do they like him? Because he was the good cop to Ralph's bad cop earlier in the season. Okay, so he's kind of the guy that they would go to sort of get things off their chest, and he would kind of give them a bit of rope. But when you're the guy making the decisions, you don't have that luxury. And this was the thing that we highlighted after that Chelsea win was, okay, we've got that win under our belts, and yeah, excellent. We've played well enough and probably just about deserved to take that result the way we defended. And yeah, we said, okay, it's fine, but are we really going to give this guy the gig on a permanent, a semi-permanent basis off the back of one performance? Because caretakers have a history of doing this. You get an initial uplift because the players are relieved that the guy they didn't like is gone and the guy that they do like is now in charge, and they're happy for him, and they'll run through a brick wall for him for three games. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we've got to actually take orders from this guy now. Is he trying to actually be serious manager now rather than friendly manager? And actually it turns out the guy's, because he's got no managerial experience, there's no nous there at all. And I mean, for all that we all kind of had a bit of a giggle at Hodgson being given the Palace job.
Yeah, he's done a job though, isn't he?
Three wins from three, and Palace are, I mean, for all that people were wrongly talking that they were on the slide and in serious trouble, I mean, they're looking at the top half again now. And yeah, it's been a mistake. And I mean, I was kind of semi-serious, probably about 75-80% serious actually with my tweet after the game saying, how about a fourth manager this season then? Because I don't see, I mean, as Glenn said earlier, I don't see where we're getting four goals, let alone 4 points to make up the gap on the teams above. And that's even discounting the fact that clearly they will also take some points at some stage this season.
I said on the podcast ages ago, I think that the players still call him Ruben, even to this day in all the interviews. And that always jars me a little bit. I just feel like...
Not Gaffer or
the boss, or, you know, it's Ruben, which is interesting. I mean, you don't look at the results on the Sellers. I mean, they won two games, two draws, and they've lost the rest. The wins were against Chelsea, who were a diabolical. Leicester, who tried their hardest to not score that day. They drew with 10 Man United. They drew with Tottenham, managed by a bloke who wanted to get fired. And they've lost every other game. They've scored six goals in that time. I think the results, they're marginally better than Nathan Jones, but I think they're pretty poor.
I wasn't calling him Ruben when he took Alcaraz off. I was calling him something else entirely.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That's the thing. I think it was Benji yesterday, Alfie, that pointed out, or maybe today, that the stats don't lie, do they? We've had, I think, four of those big six-pointers now, and he's lost three of them, and we've only scored once in one of those games.
And don't get me wrong, the players have to accept responsibility for that as well. The player, they do not have it in the big moment. Very clearly, it's not all Ruben's fault, but yeah, the stats speak for themselves.
In terms of an audition process and looking at someone to bring us back next year, he's not exactly covering himself in glory.
No.
Couple of things. Paul says, I only want three things from the rest of the season. Now, Prowsey to break Beckham's record whilst playing for us, which is fair. Please don't let Bournemouth be the team to relegate us, which could happen. And finally, the club need to move on from Sellis now, or at least make it clear that he won't be the manager for pre-season and next year. And a lot of people saying the same kind of things today. As you mentioned, Glenn, though, we are only 4 points away from safety. So I don't know. Is there still, there's still some football to play?
Well, we haven't played much recently.
No, I can't even be bothered to think about it, to be honest. It wouldn't, for me, it wouldn't matter if we were 1 point behind. We're so bad. I mean, what are we going to get at Arsenal next week? You know, so let us say there's good. We're lucky. We're incredibly lucky that we're still anywhere near it. I imagine that 23 points after, what is it, 32 games, 31 games, normally sees you miles away. You know, I've been thinking a lot about the season we got relegated in 2004-05. That team was miles better than this one.
I was trying to think.
Scored loads of goals.
But at least
did you go down with more of a fight? I can't remember.
Well, there were some great games at the end of the season. I remember one game at St Mary's where we beat Norwich with Henri Camara scoring the last minute. It was great. You know, he scored the last minute winner. Roof came off, but practically it was brilliant. There were some moments like that. Whereas this team, it's like creeping death, isn't it? It's just horrendous. There's just nothing about it that is any good. And I mean, you know, you try and be positive, but there's nothing to be positive about at all. There is absolutely nothing to be positive about. There's nothing in this team that suggests that they're even going to get 4 points between now and the end of the season. You know, I mean, it's probably impossible with the fixtures for the other three teams to keep on losing. I mean, if you want to grasp at straws, you're looking at Everton getting deducted points for financial irregularities, and then you've still got to catch two of the others. And I just don't see it. You know, Bournemouth. I know we're not predicting Bournemouth, but I'll get my 1-0 defeat in now. It's in fact, we might as well not even predict Saints scoring. We might as well just make it easy and predict what the other team are going to get. It's so bad. It is only 4 points, but I have absolutely no hope and no confidence that we'll get anywhere near another team and we'll go down flat last.
I think that sentiment is shared by pretty much everybody watching or listening this week. Let's go on to the Arsenal game on Friday. That result against West Ham means that Friday is potentially quite a big game for Arsenal, Steve. Mm-hmm. They're going to need to get all 3 points, aren't they? So 2 weeks running, though, they've blown a 2-0 lead. So is there a glimmer of hope we might get something?
Well, there's no point in us giving them a 2-0 lead because that would involve us scoring twice to get back into it, which probably isn't going to happen. I guess charitably, you would say that over the course of the season, our better performances have largely come against the better teams. We got a point in the reverse fixture and thoroughly deserved to. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, Arsenal, the backside seems to have come out of them the last week and a half or so. Maybe we can go there and put a bit more pressure on them. But I mean, based on what we've witnessed in the last couple of games, certainly this 90 minutes, City game's a little bit different, I think, but certainly what we saw yesterday, I wouldn't be pinning any sort of hopes on it, that's for sure.
What have you made of their season, Glenn? I mean, firstly, I think my first question, does it really matter about Friday night? I kind of think, like, we're going to go there, we're going to get turned over, and that's that. It's almost sort of irrelevant, really, isn't it? We can try and talk it up and say, well, we might get a point or we might be able to put in a good performance, but we kind of know that it ain't going
to
happen.
Okay, well, seven games to go. You can't afford to give up any game now. You know, you've got to go there with a game plan to try and win it. It's laughable in itself, but there's no logic to suggest that we can do that. You would think it would be a pretty routine game. The only, you know, we've had many games this season where we've played teams that for whatever reason have been in desperate trouble. Like we played Villa before, you know, when Steven Gerrard was still in charge and they'd lost seven games in a row. We played Not Forest when they not only got a point away all season or one goal or whatever. And you need to go into those games and get your foot on the throat and be ruthless. But every game we've had like that this season against a team that's had any sort of jitters, we've just gone in and been passive and rubbish. So, yeah, I mean, Arsenal could be in full choke mode, which they appear to be in. But yeah, I mean, if we had anything about us, you could think, yeah, we'll cause them a few problems. We'll go at it hard in the first 15 minutes and see how much they they really want to get back on track, or whether they're just all feeling sorry for themselves. But I don't expect we'll do that. I expect Sellers to send us up there, probably with no striker again.
Trying to
mimic the Spanish team that he probably grew up watching when Cesc Fabregas was the false nine or whatever. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, the teams that have played false nines, you kind of think of Spain, who had all these brilliant midfield players, and they'd keep the ball for 90% of the time, and then eventually one of them would pop up and score. You think City last year did exactly the same thing. And we're trying to do it with the players that we've got. You know, we're trying to mimic two elite teams. So I don't know what plan he's going to go in with. I mean, I'd be tempted to just go, the most basic 4-4-2 you can possibly get, and get crosses into the box and see how much their central defenders like it. But I very much doubt we'll do that. So it'd be interesting to see what he does. I mean, I think defensively, Walker Peters and Pero against Martinelli and Saka, that, we could potentially come out on top there. But the one we got to watch is Odegaard. Odegaard joining in from midfield. He plays roughly the same role that Eze played for Crystal Palace yesterday. And if Lavia and Ward-Prowse are not tracking him, or we're not doing a job there, maybe it's a game for someone like Diallo to come in and give us a third body in there. But we have to have an attacking threat, because we have to try and score. But don't hold out much hope. But there is an opportunity there, simply because Arsenal have wobbled the last week or so. But don't hold your breath.
It's going to require 11 players playing at their absolute best, isn't it, Alfie? Really, there's not going to be many opportunities. So when we do get a chance, they're going to have to be ruthless. And of course, they haven't been doing that.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that, wouldn't it? I think, like I say, having some forwards on the pitch might help. And to be fair, they have created chances in the last couple of games, so I think the opportunity is there. But if there's one thing I would like to see for the rest of the season, I think it's because the football isn't giving us much hope. I want to see somebody who's making decisions, somebody who's running the club day to day, come out publicly and acknowledge that they have made errors this season. We all make mistakes. Unfortunately, these ones will be costly, but and it's not been an easy year either. I think for 4 years of Gao Zhisheng after the Chinese foreign policy change had left the club pretty stale, and it was only going to head in one way without the cash injection that we've had, and regardless. But I just think, if you weren't going to back Ralph, you should have got rid of him sooner. When you did, you brought in Nathan Jones. You didn't get Ralph a striker. You've doubled down on this youth policy that has got us so many sellable assets. Romeo Lavia, Bella Kotchap, really exciting players who we're immensely grateful for, but clearly haven't got it mentally to put it together without the experience. You've got Gavin Bazunu in goal, who just needed somebody as a number two who could challenge him. There's no number two. There's no number two at the club. Alex McCarthy and Willy Caballero, clearly neither of them can do it anymore, otherwise they'd be playing. And look, when they got rid of Nathan Jones after the January recruitment, we've seen the January, none of them made an impact. Charlie Alcaraz, to be fair, actually a very good signing. But Onyemachu, Orsic, even Kamal Dean, really, who's also a good player. Nobody scored a goal. And then they replaced Jones with Ruben Sellers. Jesse Marsh was close, and we know that Jesse ended up walking away on day two of the negotiations. And you've ended up with somebody somehow who is going to be even more disliked than Nathan Jones by the end of the season. So I hope that somebody can...
Steady on.
I can hope that somebody can acknowledge that, they've made mistakes. And the best thing about football is next season, if they start winning games, people will forget all about it. And if they do keep winning games, they win 30, 35 games, they'll be back up and we can all move on and we'll all be buzzing again. It'll be a new era. But I just hope that somebody can acknowledge that things have gone wrong this year.
My biggest concern is that the team we have at the moment will struggle in the Championship next year. I see a lot of people talking online about, who would be your preferred 11 and who's going to start. And have we got someone that's going to score 25 goals next year? That's what really worries me.
To Sport Public's credit, I think they'll spend in the summer. If they go down, I think they will invest, and I think they will try and create a squad that can take on the Championship. To be fair to them, they've already come out and said that the financial is going to be okay. I think they're going to need to raise sort of £50 million worth of player sales, but that's not going to be hard because it's going to be so many players that are going to be leaving.
Well, Lavia gone, and that's
your money coming. And then the rest will be reinvested, and hopefully. And I think, it's not all doom and gloom, but
But it's not looking great. Let's do some score predictions for Friday night then. That's our favourite part of the podcast. I'm going to get in there early and go for the 4-0 defeat, Mr. Optimistic. Glenn, you actually, I think, were the only person that predicted the defeat to Palace. So I think you said 1-0 for that. But you were the closest. The rest of us were trying to be a bit more optimistic. So best shot for Arsenal?
3.
Okay.
3.
No, it's fine. I know what you mean. Yeah. Steve?
I'm going to go for the optimistic 3-1 defeat. The optimism being that we will score.
Yeah, Walcott, muted celebrations.
Well, I'm kind of thinking Aaron Ramsdale flapping a corner into his own net, maybe.
So not even one of our players.
That's what we're reduced to.
Hey, we'll take that. Alfie?
Yeah, I don't think it matters at all, really. But I say 2-0, and we'll go Martinelli and Saka.
Okay, fair dues. I want to finish on some positives. And Alfie, I'm going to come to you just to chat about Tino Livramento, first of all, because it was so good to see him playing 45 minutes for the B team on Friday. I know you were there. There was a small crowd there too, watching the game. You were almost like a nervous parent on the sideline at times. And I know you had a catch up with him afterwards. So he seems to be recovering well and was on good form.
Yeah, it was amazing to see, wasn't it? It was 355 days, I think, from the day he went off at Brighton. Obviously, ACL, and then I believe it was a hamstring, wasn't it, in the winter, which was a separate setback. But yeah, good to see him back. 45 minutes, good touches. And I was about to say, I spoke to him afterwards. And I think, as you mentioned now, I was a bit nervous on the sideline right before halftime when he was coming off for 45 minutes. He went full hard into two 50-50s back-to-back and he ended up on the floor. The opposing player was booked and I was really worried that, you know, we were going to see a Juan Larios. You know, I watched Juan Larios come back for the B team and he won't play for the rest of the season now after 10 minutes. So I was massively concerned. But when I said to Tino after that, you know, he scared me a little bit there. He said the one thing that he's told himself is that he's going to go into everything with 100% now. And if he gets injured again, it's because he's gone in at 100%, not because he's gone in at 90 or 80, not because he's been a bit lazy. And I think it was the busiest gantry they've had for a Staplewood game this season. Like you said, there was 150 fans as well. Everybody buzzing for him, all the players, Juan, Armel, they're all sharing the Instagram stories and whatnot. And I think it's credit to Tino, what a great lad he is. Stayed there to watch the game with his parents, that everybody at the club is happy for him. So yeah, hopefully we'll see him on the pitch at the end of the season. He wants to be on the pitch by the end of the season. So if he can achieve that, that would be good.
That would be a lift that I think we all need. Glenn, there's been a few sort of murmurs about some of the young players and perhaps their attitudes not being right, but that's not something that you can ever accuse him of at the moment, because as Alfie said, he was staying there, he was supporting the team, he was at the game at the weekend as well. He potentially could be quite key for us next year.
He seems to be a great lad, and you pick up things from Instagram stories. It's like all the players from Chelsea as well. I mean, like Amanda Brozier was one of them, because obviously he's got a very similar injury at the moment, and he was another one sort of wishing him well and stuff like that. So he's obviously got a lot of friends in the game, and you can tell just from players' demeanour sometimes what sort of people they are. I was at the game at Brighton when he got injured, and it was just one of those sickening ones where you just see it and just think, oh no. And it may sound horrible, but there are some players that they got a bad injury, you'd sort of go, oh okay, but he'll get over it. But with Tino, he's one of the last people that you'd want to get that sort of thing happen to him, especially seeing as how well he'd done, and the fact that he's very, very young, I guess on the other side, that the fact that he was so young gives him a better chance of recovering from it. So yeah, great to see him back. I'm not sure we want him to play before the end of the season, because that will remind teams that he's fit, and because we're going to need him, because I'm pretty sure Carl Walker-Peters is going to be gone in the summer, even if we stay up, which we won't. And Carl Walker-Peters is actually one of the few that I'll actually miss if they go. So having Tino to hopefully start next season is a positive that we can take from what has been a pretty horrendous season.
And another goal from Dom Ballard. Steve, that's someone else that could be quite key next year.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether he first gets the opportunity, and if he does get the opportunity, whether he can step up to that level. I mean, I think there's three managers who have already decided he's not quite ready for Premier League football, which I think we can probably all understand. Even in our sort of non-scoring situation that we're in at the moment, it's one of those. I mean, sometimes that you've got a duty of care to the player as well as the team, and you throw him into this situation, sink or swim. And if he sinks, then you've basically killed the kid's career already. The Championship will be a little bit more forgiving in terms of the quality of defenders he's up against. It'll be certainly be less forgiving in terms of the physicality. So it'll be a case. Be interesting to see whether he's able to step up to that level, or whether, I mean, whoever the manager is next season decides he'd be better served getting some first team football, maybe in League One.
Would have been interesting to see if we had stayed up. Where Ballard would have been next year, we'd have probably loaned him out. Would it have been to a Championship club, or would it have been to a League One club, or would it have been to an Eastleigh or someone like that? Because we've loaned players all over the place, so it would be interesting to know where they think he is in terms of playing men's football.
The other good news story, I guess, Alfie, that I just want to touch on before we finish is that investment this week from the owner, as you mentioned it briefly there, but another injection of cash. I think it was a share issue, wasn't it? But there's that ongoing commitment, which is good, and probably something that we can all just take a bit of heart from. As you say, next year we might have the money to come back and we might have some money to invest.
Yeah, you don't want to be stuck in the Championship for longer than a year, really. You want it to get done immediately. But like I said, everything that Rasmus and Henrik have said in the fans forum, and obviously Jacob reporting about that extra put in as well, they are here for the long run. That's always been the aim. And we have to trust them with that and hope that we don't see, obviously, a repeat of what, you know, Glenn and Steve and you guys would have witnessed sort of, what was it, 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's easier said than done, Glenn, isn't it? There's a lot of chat about, oh, we'll walk the league and it'll be fine, but it's not going to be plain sailing next year.
Well, you've got the board and Sport Republic, to be honest. They've got to start making some right decisions, haven't they? You know, they got to start getting things right. Yes, we've got 31, 34, I think it is, if you count the likes of Jack Stevens, Nathan Teller, Will Smallbone. We got 34 players. It's far too many. So there has to be... You know, some will go naturally, you know, end of contract. Some will want to, will get moves to Premier League. We'll be left with some who no one else wants. And we'll be left with some that we want. You know, we've got to start getting those decisions right. The first decision, of course, to get is the manager, who I still maintain is the single most important person at the club. And yeah, Sport Republic basically have to let the manager manage, and they have to start getting some decisions right. Otherwise, we're going to be massively struggling. But there will be issues regardless, because it is a bit of a culture shock to find yourself in the Championship. And, you know, going back to 20 years ago, I think if memory serves, we drew like something like six out of the first eight or something like that when we first went
down. We had a run of nine draws in a row, I think.
Yeah, it was mad. We just couldn't get over the line in virtually any game. And pretty soon people who were saying, oh, we're going to win loads of games in the Championship, people were realising that it wasn't really the case. Now, obviously, you know, the Championship has changed, but you can look at Burnley and say, yeah, we'll copy what they do, or you could be a Burnley, or you could be a Sunderland or a Bolton, and just keep on going. So it's all outcomes are possible, but it all starts with the board starting to get things right.
You touched on my biggest concern there, though, Glenn, in that they could lose sort of 13, 14 players and still be left with a squad that's too big and not good enough. So there is going to have to be a little bit of luck in terms of some of the players that they are able to offload. For sure.
But they've got to build. They've got to build. They've got to recruit based on getting a decent team on the pitch, not recruit in terms of, well, we can sell him for more money later on. Because I've had the impression over the last few transfer windows that if we thought we could make money on 15 right backs, we'd have signed 15 right backs, and not bothered about the fact that we haven't got a striker or we haven't got a winger who can cross a ball. Or
Gareth Southgate would have approved, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, I think there has to be a bit of a change in emphasis, and I haven't got time to do this now, but I think the playbook has to go in the bin, or at least a vast majority of it, and we have to play a different way, and you know we'll see what happens, but yeah, the squad is going to take a lot of management next year, and the recruitment and the letting people go is going to have to be spot on for all the pieces to fall into place to make an immediate return.
And a win for the women's team today, Steve. Decent win as well.
Late winner against second-placed London City Lionesses. So that more or less has handed the title to Bristol City. It's bumped us back up into fifth over Crystal Palace. Hopefully positive ends of the season. We've got I think we've got Sheffield United and Coventry left to play, who are in the bottom, both in the bottom four. Coventry have long since been relegated, so that should be a big win next week if they can remember how to score multiple goals. Because much like the men's first team, the women's first team have completely forgotten what to do sort of between the between those big white posts.
They followed the playbook.
Yeah, very much so. But yeah, good to get that. That was a bit of a surprise win, that one, really, given the way the last six or seven games have gone. So yeah, very, really good for them to get that one over the line, and hopefully two more wins to finish the season. And you'd probably say, as a first season stepping up a level, and it has been a big step up. I think that'll probably be a decent season. They'll be annoyed with the sort of little run they've had the last 6 to 8 weeks or so, and I would imagine we'll probably be pretty active in the summer.
Well, Glenn's dog's had enough, yep. So that's probably a sign that we should wrap things up. So thank you for your contributions. Don't forget, you can follow Total Saints Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. Have a search for @TotalSaintsPod. The website is totalsaints.co.uk. We're also on Patreon, as I mentioned at the start. That's where you can support the podcast with a monthly contribution. It's patreon.com/TotalSaintsPodcast. There's 4 different tiers on there, ranging from £5 to £20 per month. And each of the tiers comes with different benefits. Including some weekly shouts for those patrons in our Francis Benali and our Mick Shannon tiers. So thank you for your support to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Andy Hollis, and Anthony Thompson in the Francis Benali tier, and also Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Matt Rose, and Nick Reed in the Mick Shannon tier. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to Glenn. Thank you to Alfie. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.